Well, hello, hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Ethos of Aid podcast, or as they say in Ghana, Mema wo akwaaba, which means I welcome you. My name is Kimber, and I'm your host. And you guessed it, today we are in beautiful Ghana, West Africa. And I have the great pleasure of introducing you to Julius Kwame Tsatsu, whom I met on assignment in 2019 and referred to in episode 1. In this chapter, we'll be laying the groundwork for what has become a 3-part mini-series about the successes and complexities of Julius's deep community-based work as a man wearing many hats. He is a proud citizen of Ghana, a husband and father, a social entrepreneur, a farmer, and a full-time project officer for Right to Play International. I do not know when he rests. What I do know is Julius is an insightful, inventive, and resourceful individual with a passion for serving his community. Our first glimpse into his world is through the lens of his social entrepreneurship. Having encountered an issue repeatedly in his NGO work, Julius researched the problem and created a solution he calls TechiTap, a foot-operated hand-washing device. His experiences bringing it to communities echo those NGOs often have when bringing ideas to communities, so it's deeply helpful to hear his story. Side note, if this is your first time hearing a lovely Ghanaian accent, I invite you to surrender to the flow and open to the idea of emphasis on different syllables so that you can fully appreciate his heart-led words. And as always, I invite you to listen for connections to ideas from previous episodes and what touches and tweaks your own heart. And please let me know, either at kimbervredenburg.com or on the Ethos of Aid Facebook page or at kimbervredenburg on Instagram. See you on the other side.
Hello, Kimber.
Hi, Julius. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's so lovely to hear your voice.
Thank you. So great to have you too on the other side.
Does it feel okay to speak freely?
Yeah, I will be very comfortable speaking freely.
I'm delighted that you feel like you can speak freely. That's great. How are you today? How is Ghana today? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how your work has been impacted perhaps by COVID in the last year.
Yes, my name is Julius. I'm a social entrepreneur, a farmer, and then I'm also in a full-time employment with Right to Play International, where we work in the interest of children to promote play-based methodology. Ghana is fine. Ghana, the rains have just started after a long delay. We were actually expecting the rains in April, but it just started the later part of June, and it has been consistent. So farmers are happy, and we are no longer afraid that there will be food shortage because the rains have come finally, even though it hits some farmers hard.
You're a farmer yourself, yes?
Yeah, I'm a farmer myself, yes. In the area of COVID has negatively impacted, in fact, the world at large, and Ghana is not an exception. Many jobs have been lost because of COVID. Organizations have to cut size. People have lost family members. There were a lot of uncertainties. People were not sure what was going to happen next. People were living in fear. But I think so far, so good. A lot of improvement has happened. Personally, as a social worker, we were calling for social distance and work was not going on. Schools were closed. Churches were closed. Mm-hmm. Social places were out of reach because of COVID. So it affected my work. I stayed home from February to October 2020 because of COVID.
Wow.
So this is how COVID has impacted our lives in Ghana. And I can only say we thank God for how far he has brought us.
Yeah. when we were there, it was very clear to me that your commitment to your community and working together and your ability to be resilient in the face of challenges like that was clearly a strength of the Ghanaian people. And I'm really glad to hear that you were able to get another opportunity with Right to Play, especially after being home from February to October. That sounds like that would have been difficult.
Yeah, it was difficult, but God made provision, so
yes,
we survived.
Yes.
We survived, and I'm sure when we start talking about the Tech It Up, then you'll understand how God used that.
Well, why don't you lead us there? Talk to us about Tech It Up.
Yes, so prior to the coming of COVID, I developed a hand washing device that was technologically appropriate, foot operated hand washing device. That received all the applause from stakeholders, and the sale wasn't going. But then when the COVID came and people saw the need for appropriate hand washing, they really poured their resources into it. And a lot of orders came.
Oh, that's good. For the
purchase of that, yes.
And it's specifically because it's foot operated, yes?
Yes, yes, it stands out. It has carved a niche for itself. You know, I think it's the first foot-operated hand-washing device in Ghana that I know of. I don't know about Africa. I brought this device out and launched it in October 2019 to mark the Global Hand-Washing Day. In that 2019, I was able to sell 180 pieces of the Tech It Up hand-washing device. Two NGOs, World Vision Ghana, Plan International Ghana. Yes.
That's great. What inspired you to make the Tech It Up?
So I have been in the NGO space for some time and work with children and the vulnerable people. So the only hand washing device available was the one that you need to turn the tap with your fingers. Mm-hmm. And usually our fingers are infected or dirty before we turn the tap. And so, to a large extent, your hand washing wasn't effective or it wasn't appropriate. So that had been my worry as a social worker and a social entrepreneur to find solution to that issue. I started exploring ways of getting a device that can actually help us wash our hands without us touching any tap. So by God's grace, we launched it in 2019. So what pushed me is to see how we can prevent this cross-contamination, because I believe that most students who fell sick and were out of school and were losing productive hours in school probably may be due to improper hand washing, sanitation-related illnesses that prevent children from concentrating on academic work.
So your work in child protection, it sounds like, was a part of the inspiration.
Yes, yes, definitely. Because I have the love for children and children's welfare. Mm-hmm. So it's been my passion to work to bring children out of any form of difficulty. And so that really inspired me to get this device. I have observed these challenges on the ground. And then later when I joined Right to Play to lead child protection projects in the cocoa growing areas, similar observations were made. And you see that children are passing through difficulties just because of little mistakes. A child can fall sick due to typhoid or diarrhea because of improper hand washing. Mm-hmm. So the zeal to inculcate in children the habit of hand washing and appropriate device for the same purpose became my priority.
Mm-hmm.
And so as part of my work as a child protection activist, as part of the passion, as a result of the passion I have for children's health and well-being, I thought that this device would be appropriate to help children overcome difficulties in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very innovative. And what's coming up for me as I'm listening to you are those conversations we had in the car when we were together in 2019. And I referred to this on the podcast in episode one, where we talked about the differences in people's beliefs. And you said to me in the car that day, you said, people in Ghana want our children to become great citizens, but we don't always know how we need to invest in them today to help them become those great citizens. The question that comes up for me is, are the communities that know about TechiTap making those connections between today and tomorrow related to hygiene because of your TechiTap?
Yes, the schools that have had the benefit of getting TechiTap are using it appropriately, and the families who actually are aware of the presence of TechiTap in the schools are so elated, are so happy about the availability of TechiTap. They mentioned that they have seen a difference in the use of TechiTap compared to other hand washing devices. And so the excitement is there. But in Ghana, our culture of maintenance is poor. Ownership became difficult, and all the communities that were supplied with TechiTap by some organizations who bought, most of them are not functioning because there was no clear ownership. Even though we were to follow up on the device, every device has a warranty of between 6 months to 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were supposed to take care of it. Sometimes you would go there and the way they are handling it, you would be discouraged and you wouldn't even want to put it in good shape, because when you even put it in good shape, you don't know how you are coming to meet it the next time. So after first maintenance, second maintenance, you are not motivated to even go and put it in shape for them. So the community level ownership is a challenge.
So what do you think that's about? Because for me, what I'm also hearing again is that taking care of things today so that it lasts for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think the first challenge is ignorance. And as I mentioned, lack of ownership, people don't want to take responsibility for their actions. And once nobody is dedicated and committed to keeping the thing well, any other person handles it anyhow. And sometimes the people who are even committed to keeping the device well or keeping the items well, they get discouraged by the acts and actions of other community members. And I think the underlying factor is lack of education on proper maintenance of it goes beyond even TechiTap. Roads, infrastructure, buildings are not being cared for. Once it becomes a public item, people don't take care of things because they believe that it is not for anybody, it is for all of us. So they don't care even if they use it in a way that will put it at risk of not lasting. So the lack of ownership, the ignorance, lack of commitment on the part of the users, and then the education.
Yes, so thank you for that. I'm not sure what you mean by education. From my experience, when we give people information alone, it doesn't change behavior. People have to want to. People have to want to care. People have to believe in the value of something. And so that comes back to those points I was making in episode one around the differences in belief. So what do you think is needed to build that ownership, to create caring so that your TechiTaps last in the community or in schools? What do you think would be helpful there?
Thank you very much, Kimba. I think that there is the need to continuously conscientize community members on these challenges. So you go the first attempt, you talk to them, the second attempt, you talk to them. And depending on the difficulties that you identify as a social worker, you look at people and you can tell the acceptance level of what you are telling them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can even go behind and ask if there are really some challenges, why certain things are not being done. Then you come back to them again and address those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, if the people don't make their mind to change, it is really difficult. Now, people change because of circumstances. Somebody is hungry, somebody is really in a form of hardship. Okay, he hasn't gotten 2 square meals a day, and we are telling him to wash his hands. He doesn't see the need for that. His priority is to how to get food and eat.
Yep.
And poverty had been the underlying cause of almost all our challenges. Poverty. people feel that, well, because I don't have money, I don't have food to eat, any other thing shouldn't be, I shouldn't be concerned with any other thing.
So, well, it's really hard to think about anything else when one doesn't have a full belly. Like it's, yeah.
Yes. So the basic needs of the people, food, clothing, shelter, if it is well addressed, we can make a lot of progress touching all other aspects of social life of the people.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like the work that is happening in Ghana at the moment from the NGOs that support and the government initiatives, are there efforts going towards those things?
Yes, there are different NGOs with different intervention areas they are working on. There are some that are targeting food security of the vulnerable people. And the approach hadn't been beneficial in most of the cases because of the mentality of the people that we are dealing with. Somebody was sharing an example with me where a man has been identified for support. So he was given $100 to get some livestock and rare so he can reproduce and then sell to take care of the family. Mm-hmm. By the time the follow-up was made, the person rather used the $100 to get a second wife, and they are still in the hardship, and he was asking for more help. So sometimes the mentality of the people we are helping, in as much as we know that, well, sometimes our approach may not be effective, the mentality of the people we are helping also doesn't encourage a lot of, how will I say, positive turnouts.
Mm-hmm. Where does that mentality come from, do you think?
The mentality comes from lack of education, ignorance, cultural backgrounds of some of the people, the beliefs that they hold as they grow. Mm-hmm. They don't know how they can work around these beliefs. They believe that as a man, you should marry three, you should marry four to show that you are a man. That is the display of manhood, that I have married four. So any little resource he has, he's going to marry four. He doesn't think about the economic and the social consequences of that action. In most cases too, they believe that, look, the man has to produce more children so that the children will become workforce for them on the farm. And they don't really care whether these children grow to become responsible citizens or not. But for the fact that my grandfather had 28 children, I should also have at least 20 children so that I am taking the real steps of my father or my grandfather. So these cultural backgrounds, this mentality,
the values,
people, the values, the beliefs have made our people to have this difficulty in most of the communities.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say that a lot of these are changing with the coming in of most of the NGOs on board. You see that mentalities are changing, behavior changes are happening, and more results are showing. So you can only see these ones more in the remote areas. But when you come to the peri-urban and cosmopolitan areas, it's on the minimum.
Are you enjoying listening to Julian's words? I sure am. If you are, please let me know, either at KimberVredenburg.com or on the Ethos of Aid Facebook page or at KimberVredenburg on Instagram. Now let's get back to it and wrap up this episode. Oh, that was so good, wasn't it? Did it leave you wanting more? I hope so. It was such sweet dialogue for me. And though with reflection, there are many questions I also wish I had asked, it was really important not to interrupt his flow. He speaks so eloquently and invitingly, and the themes are so resonant. I am deeply appreciative that from the first, "How are you?" one gets a glimpse into the priorities from his answer. The rains have come, so we are no longer concerned about food insecurity, he told us. And that is not simply because he himself is a farmer, As a member of his community, culture, and society, he is always thinking about his fellow citizens and their ability to feed themselves, knowing, as we discussed in episode 1 in Malawi, that it all starts with food. Life is full of possibilities when one can let go the concern about food. Basic needs. And yet, as he also highlights, even basic needs are no match for cultural beliefs at times. As one man representing many follows in his grandfather's definition of what wealth means and looks like, as he uses aid to pay for more wives, to have more children, disconnected from whether they are well fed or cared for. And on the flip side, Julius describes a man so hungry as to be unable to be concerned with the trivialities of hand washing. There are many more examples like these. These are the complexities of human service work, of social work, of humanitarian work. And within that, human change, social change, the necessity of working at the level of beliefs. I also love that Julius's narrative highlights some of the challenges international practitioners encounter, such as community ownership. Community ownership, for those of you listening from outside the humanitarian sector, is exactly what it sounds like. It's an acknowledgement that ideas or programs or agendas initiated from outside of a country or context, even ones grounded in human rights or international conventions, must have buy-in from the communities expected to receive or engage with those ideas and programs. And it's often considered, if unspoken, as a challenge for international practitioners and international NGOs for that very reason, being from outside a context. So community ownership is the practice of engaging with communities at ideally all stages of the program cycle, from inception to design to implementation, to help communities own these ideas as their own. And I'm sure you can hear the complexities I'm not even pointing to in that sentence alone. The intention, though, is to create sustainability and foster a different kind of culture of maintenance than the one Julius was speaking about. One where products and services are integrated into and owned by communities to the extent that they will continue functioning after a project has wrapped up. Whether it be a product like Julius's hand washing device or an initiative aimed at getting more girl children in schools. Community ownership is necessary for any kind of sustainable change. And yet, as we know, and as we saw in the example of the 28 pastoralists in Ethiopia in episode 2, information doesn't change behavior. For such ownership of ideas from outside to take place, there must be emotional resonance with them. There must be connection to one's own familiar life experience to forge connection, build understanding, create desire, and belief in the value of them. And as you likely already know, if you've been listening to me, I'm an advocate for approaches that honor what already exists in people's belief systems and drawing out what is already known to create space for the possibility of considering a different perspective. And so here we have a narrative that expands the concept even of what inside and outside context mean. It doesn't solely refer to being from or not from a country or a culture. Here, Julius is working in his own culture of origin, but in different communities of that same culture, and encountering very similar challenges as INGOs experience. He speaks of lack of education and the mentality of recipients and cultural practices as both challenges and, I would say, solutions to those challenges. I would go even further and say they're opportunities. In the next chapter of the series, we'll explore these ideas further. And Julius gives great examples of how he works with the belief systems of his fellow citizens, and he'll add yet more layers of complexity to the discussion. He highlights how approaches must align with the mentality and beliefs of the people involved, and we'll hear how validated learning through project cycles have been vital to make the necessary shifts that have led to his success. As always, I would love to know what you're thinking and what questions come to mind as you listen. I've created an Ethos of Aid Facebook group where we can have dialogue about this, so please head on over and join. I'd love for you to check out Julius's Techie Tap as well. So to do that, please head to the Community Alliance Foundation group on Facebook. And again, you can find me at kimbervredenburg.com and at kimbervredenburg on Instagram. And now, in addition to wherever you access podcasts, you can also find me on captivate.fm/ethosofaid. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you for the next chapter next Friday.